Senior Focus.
Welcome everyone. I'm Anne-Marie Curry. I'm your presenter for today. And it's the month of February and it's the Love Your Community month. So the messages have been coming out from a number of places. Whether you've heard them, I'm not sure. But on our program, we have been focusing on gratitude, which we've been picking up as a theme and talking about from time to time on sessions. Changing lives and improving health and well-being is an important focus, if you like, for people like myself who advocate for seniors' issues and for seniors' well-being in the community. And one of the ways that we can do this is to really encourage people to think about positive thinking and the power of positive thinking. I know that people will be familiar with names like Dale Carnegie and others that popularised this notion in the 1930s and so on. And that was when people were very depressed at the time of the Great Depression, as it was known, when the economic downturn was global and fairly catastrophic. Today we face different sorts of issues. Often individual businesses struggle against big corporations and whether it's a small grocer against the big supermarket or it's a small grower against a large business supplying supermarkets, that type of thing is quite common. But there are other sorts of economic pressures that come on people, and where land changes hand and significant amounts of land go into foreign ownership, then there's a lack of community focus. Some people are noticing this in some places where there are lots of houses empty, and there is also difficulty in getting the community together to take action if a number of the owners are indeed absentee landlords. So sometimes the power of positive thinking is a difficult thing, because people think, well, what does my effort in this direction, how can that make a difference when there's so many forces out there working against people's well-being, if you like. But one of the things that research has shown us, and we didn't have the benefit of that in the 1930s, recent research has clearly identified that it's possible to change lots of outcomes. You can change blood pressure, you can change your eating patterns, but you can also change, just through the power of your thoughts, whether you retain water, whether you're overweight, whether you're hanging on to weight because of unconscious thinking. And there are lots of areas in our lives that we can change things quite deliberately, provided we become aware of what is going on in our mind. And when you consider what's in the conscious mind is only a drop in the bucket, what is in the unconscious mind, what is driving you deep down that you perhaps don't examine often, that's what's really crucial. And so a lot of research is really focused on what mechanisms and tools can be used to help people change the unconscious. And that was what got me thinking about the Gratitude Journal, because so many people are reporting positive results and outcomes. And certainly in doing it myself, not only have I noticed that if I'm doing it regularly every night, then I wake up brighter and more alert and just ready to face the day in the next morning. But I'm also noticing that this time I'm actually choosing to do 5 things I'm grateful for, which is more of an exercise than the 3 that I did when I did this for a year once before. I'm also working with the powerful change process of using affirmations. And affirmations are things that, statements that are made in the present tense. So I will not eat carbohydrates laden with sugar, for example, would not be an affirmation that I would recommend, because it's got a negative in it. It's using the not. So it's that. And there's no such thing in the unconscious as a no or a not. And that is why it's never a good idea to tell kids not to do something, because it's like an invitation to carry on doing it or start doing it. So stating in the present tense, I now eat healthy foods I enjoy, or I now replace problem foods with foods I enjoy that are low carb or something like that, would work much more effectively. What you get, you focus on, is a very important concept. And I say it's a concept because it's an organising thought. It's a really powerful thought. Because our minds are like computers. We can program them to be focusing on this, that, these, those. But whatever we're going to focus on, that's what our mind is going to concentrate on. So when people become fearful, then they attract negative outcomes. And this is often the case where people have been burgled. They get burgled again and again. But that doesn't happen to everybody. So there is a difference in who seems to succumb to being fearful and who then attracts more burglaries. That's why people recommend that, who've looked into this, that it's really helpful to have some kind of ceremony or process to clear the energy, to shift the negative vibes, spring clean the area, put in fresh flowers, play some music regularly, just to lift the atmosphere. And I loved it when Sam Neill came out in support of the concert program and said how he can change his state really rapidly just by switching on to the music. So if he gets agitated or stressed, on goes the concert program. Having tools at your fingertips that you can use that will keep you positive, that's really important in terms of outcomes. Because no matter how many advocates are trying to get things improved for seniors out in the world, getting things changed, like more seating so you can go out and walk around and feel that there'll be a seat when you need one, or better bus services that go on the routes where you travel, or better planning in terms of footpaths. You know, are they wide enough to carry the volume of traffic they're expected to carry at the moment? Do they have enough separation with the road? Do you feel safe on them because of the design? Are there the yellow dots for you to stand before you leave the footpath to cross the road, etc., etc.? I mean, we can all think about these sorts of things, but clearly, no matter how much attention goes into designing the environment, if we don't design what's going on in our heads, only we can flick switches from negative to positive. Only we can program our own unconscious. Only we can become conscious of what it is that we are running in our heads. I mean, if we're going around with a little tape in our heads that's saying, well, nobody's taking any notice of me and no one cares about me and I'm not really important here, they're just not interested in me, and this is going on night and day, then it'll be very just, you know, you will just expect then that a person in this situation will feel lonely and possibly won't have friends because they'll be their own self-fulfilling prophecy. But interrupting that tape, finding a reason to interrupt that tape, taking responsibility, monitoring oneself, that's much harder. Just being accountable to yourself, because after all, nobody else knows what's going on in that tape necessarily. It's not exposed to everyone, so you have a choice. I think it might be time for a music break, and I've selected Basin Street Blues, and I hope you enjoy that. And when we come back, we'll be looking at the environment more and how we can be focusing on aspects of our environment that will strengthen our communities.
Basin Street is the street where the
Welcome back, everyone. And if you've just joined us, where it's Love for Your Community Month, and we're focusing on the environment in this section of the program. It's quite, for me, it's quite rewarding to consider how many wonderful groups there are out in the community actually looking at different aspects of how the community can be improved. And whether they're groups that have been going for 30 years or more, or whether they're groups that just started a year ago, it really is quite incredible how many people are volunteering hours that actually ensure that a lot of these actions that the groups take are done, and they're done well. And I'm thinking of one in particular, Friends of the Wairaki Stream, which is a local group operating in Linfield, and it draws on a community that's very stable. There's a lot of people who own their own houses and have been there for a long time, and it's a racially and ethnically mixed community. It has a lot of migrants, but migrants who are stable and who've been in the country quite some time. It has a lot of children growing up. There are a lot of schools in the area. And so with the direction and courage of a local nurse in her 60s, the group has got underway, and they've got tools, they've got expertise from Conservation New Zealand, they have support from the local board, the Puke Te Papa local board, and what they tend to do is monthly clean-ups. So they have worked very diligently in several areas of the Wairaki Stream, which is at the back of Ticket Countdown on the avenue, and then ends up in the Manukau Harbour. What they've recovered from the stream is tyres, bits of motor car. A whole car was lifted out with a crane, and that was all done free. I'm not quite sure who supplied the crane and how that was done, but it was not a cost to the community or the council. And the planting that was done last year on the banks of the stream at the back of Countdown was extremely successful. There was upwards of 40, 50 people there with their children, and a community barbecue ended the morning's planting. I think some people had fun falling over and sliding in the mud, but it was generally a successful event. There's going to be another one on the 29th of February in Linfield Cove, and that's going to be an all-day event connecting with Sea Week. And I believe that Domino's Pizzas are supplying the food. So it's wonderful to see local businesses getting in behind and supporting these activities. And there are many groups like this Friends of Oakley Creek, which has been going, wow, for, I don't know, 20 plus years. And Wendy Johns is the driving force behind Friends of Oakley Creek. And a lot of people have heard of it, and a lot of people like the area, and they go walking and they enjoy the benefits of the work that's been done by the group over the years. And I think the same will apply once the heavy duty stuff has been done by the Friends of Wairaki Stream. I'm sure that people are going to enjoy the local environment in Linfield a lot more, and people from all over Auckland, because some of the best bush in Auckland is on the Waikowhai coast, and gradually the local board is putting a pathway around that coast. So stage two is being worked on currently, but stage one starts in Onehunga at Taumanu Reserve on the edge of the Manukau Harbour. So that's something to watch out for, is how you can get to explore these areas no matter where you live. And you can do them by bus, and you don't have to do the whole thing. I mean, you can't do the whole thing as there are bits that aren't connected at the moment, but you will be able to, even when it's finished, do it in sections. And there's a good bus service, the 25L, the Linfield bus that goes up through Hillsborough and all the way down to Countdown at the Avenue. That's a really good bus because you can get off it at various points and get back on it again. And it's a regular service. It's quite frequent, about 3 an hour during the week and 2 an hour on the weekend. Now, there's also another trust that I was going to mention that's been set up, and that's the Butterfly Trust. And Jackie Knight, who organises that, has been concerned about the plight of monarch butterflies for some time. But really, there's a lot of work that benefits all the butterflies that's done through tree planting, through maintaining a reserve as a butterfly space, and really encouraging people to look out for butterflies, to grow appropriate plants, to feed them, and so on. So these groups are just amazing. Now, I'm going to mention another group, For the Love of Bees. Sarah Smuts-Kennedy has been behind this organisation, and they are doing a whole lot of initiatives. They are planting raised beds in people's gardens at their request, and then helping them sustain that garden. They were doing the Griffiths Garden downtown, very near the council headquarters, the tower on Mount Albert Street, but that had to move recently because of the CRL and other issues. But I think it is going somewhere. It's going to have a home. In the meantime, they are spreading the message by running films. So they're having a film this Friday night at the Alan Melville Centre in High Street. It's a great place. You can park in the council car park building in High Street and actually walk along, or you can bus in there fairly easily. So that's a really interesting film about the work that bees do in the environment, how critical they are, and supporting them in the work for, indeed, our long-term survival. So anyone who wants to go along to that film is welcome to go to the Alan Melville Centre and or look at Love of Bees on Facebook and find out details. And I'm only talking about a fraction of the number of groups there are out there. I've concentrated on the central Auckland area, but there are groups right across the region. So at this point, I now want to shift the environmental focus to our streetscapes. And there's been quite a lot of people discussing with me how difficult it is to get into the CBD these days. They, even if they have an appointment and they have a say they're suffering with a waiting for a hip operation, they're not wanting to catch the bus because they don't want to walk too far when they get to the CBD. So they're looking to use one of the council car parks. But some of the difficulties are that the routes that they would normally drive on, they can't because of the CRL disruption. Some people are unsure where to go by bus because of the CRL changes that have come about. And other people are just finding the chaos down there has got to them, and it's very disruptive. It's difficult for people who live in the inner city. I know someone living on Grays Avenue, for example, who would normally rely on public transport and says he has to walk too far to reach buses now, and it's not very convenient, and it's making life very difficult. He has to go and do a lot of his regular work as an advocate in the CBD, and he said he can't really get around to see the people and go to the meetings that he would like to do. It's all taking twice as long, and it's twice as stressful. So that got me thinking about environments in general and just how people are in terms of, do they go out and walk? Do they choose to walk? How often do they walk? Where do they walk? A lot of people I know get in their car and they drive somewhere to a park and then they walk in that park. So I know people who go to Monte Cecilia Park off Hillsborough Road and enjoy the big trees up there, the Moreton Bay figs and so on. Maybe go and have a cup of coffee at the Pa Homestead afterwards. On the other hand, I know people who get in the car and drive to Keith Hay Park, which is quite a decent size, and do a circuit or two around the park. It's very pleasant, and it's large, and it means you can clock up a few k's quite simply. But all this adds to congestion on the roads and adds to the carbon footprint. If you were wanting to do more walking, I guess there are key things that come into play. Do you feel safe in the area? Do you fit this walking in to part of your daily transport plan, where you're going? If you have to walk, have you got the right footwear? And do you find the pathway is smooth? Are you worried about tree roots or potholes or just jagged surfaces? It would be good to review what's going on and why you walk, where you walk and why you don't. I've looked into the research that's coming out, and there's quite a lot of research now focusing on street improvements. But it shows that if they don't do a walkability assessment, if they don't assess how walkable the street is beforehand and afterwards, then they actually can't make sense of the data they've got as to how people are using this space and whether in fact it means more people will walk on it or less people will walk on it. So they need to actually build in this measurement about walkability. And that's a very interesting phenomenon because it means that something that advocates for seniors can focus on. We can actually ask questions about the walkability of a design. Has it been assessed? And what figures are they showing for how many people are using this, and do they expect that to change, and how? So keeping people up to the mark when they're doing urban design is an important task for a lot of seniors who advocate for seniors' wellbeing. One of the things that has come out of the research is that you get a higher increase in pedestrian activity if you've got a higher walkability measure. In other words, if the assessment shows that this space is highly walkable, then you will get more people walking on it. If you change a space and the walkability aspect of it doesn't change, then you won't get more people walking on it. So there might be some effort going into improving the environment, but if the surface isn't upgraded properly, if it hasn't been thought through in terms of walkability, it won't necessarily mean more people will walk in that area, despite the amount of money that's been spent. And some classic examples have arisen where engineers have been asked to be disability conscious and design culverts across a slope at a point at the base of the slope so that it won't trip people up walking down the slope. An actual example of this was signed off by a disability advocate, and the engineer was given the big tick, and the project went ahead and was finished and was all bells and whistles and ticks, and everyone said, oh, this is great. An almost identical project took place in another part of Auckland City, but somehow there wasn't any advocacy or disability assessment done, and the person designed it, the engineer, just put a culvert right through the middle of the slope at the key point at which people would be struggling to see, those with sight impairments, toddlers, anybody in fact who was getting down that slope. They would be at the most vulnerable at the halfway mark. That's exactly where they put the culvert. As a result, there were a number of injuries, and questions then became asked by the disability advocates, and the upshot of it was the whole thing had to be redone at considerable expense. So this is the kind of thing that a lot of us focus on in terms of seniors' wellbeing, trying to get change. And we will be continuing to ask questions about e-scooters and footpaths. I'm not against e-scooters. I think they're a great invention. But where do they go? Because in cities around the world, particularly cities that are senior conscious, that are signed up to the age-friendly cities movement, they've banned e-scooters from the footpaths. It is not permitted, not in Singapore and not in a lot of cities. So I think it's a case of watch the space, because we have got people advocating at the highest level to the Transport Authority, and I think we do need a ruling about this. And so I will be taking this up further. It's time to be finishing, and thank you for listening, and we look forward to something else about loving your community next session. Bye for now. Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6, or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/senior focus, and do note, Senior Focus is one word.